being a Sesshin at the monastery, which was quite well attended. There were about 50 people there, of all ages and conditions, as we all are. And the topic was the grasses and trees in Greater Sesshin, and the specific topic were the five great elements, which are earth, air, fire, water, and space. There are a number of different configurations of the elements, but these are the five material elements. Even though space is not a material element, it certainly influences and is integrally integrated into all of the functioning of the four material elements: earth, air, fire, and water. So I wanted to talk a bit about the elements, starting with, and Judy was at the Sesshin, so you've heard all of this, but you may notice other things that you didn't notice before about it. The way that this came about, this particular teaching came about, was the Buddha noticed that the Buddha was a very handsome man, and his son Rahula was very handsome, just like his dad. So the Buddha noticed one day that Rahula was looking like he really was appreciating how handsome he was and how much of an effect his looks had as he went through the world. And so the Buddha, always interested in kind of disabusing us of the identities that lead to suffering, gave this teaching to Rahula about how all material elements are conditioned and they all change. And so, lest he think that his good looks had anything to do with anything except momentary pleasure, which is fine, he didn't want him to really think that that's who he was. He is just like all other things, all other forms, temporarily constructed. So I'll go through the characteristics of the four. And this teaching is really interesting. When Chosen, I co-led this with Chosen, and she said she wanted to do it on the elements, and I thought, oh, really? Again? But that's always the experience in any of the teachings, is they're kind of vast and infinite, depending on your own moment in life. You can see more into it. And so I really came to appreciate this as another approach to practice, is to look at solidity, earth, the earth element, solidity. So it's not just the ground and the dirt. It's any kind of solidity interior to us, which are bones, teeth, any fibrous part of ourselves, cartilaginous. You know what I'm trying to say. So being aware when you're walking, one of the first practices is to, even as you're doing Zazen, you are sitting as skeleton. And there was a film that was made a while back where they turned all of the actors, they looked into them as skeletal beings, and they're moving through space as a whole bunch of skeletons. It's kind of a shocking moment in the film. But I've always remembered that, and I work with it periodically. If I'm moving around, I just think of myself as a skeletal body. And it's true all the time, right here. The skeleton, the hands, feet. How many bones in the feet? 17? Or 17 in the hands?
200 and something.
Yeah, anyway, we're a lot of bones. We're a lot of earth element. And the correlate in the way our mind goes is anything fixed in the mind, anything solid in the mind, so we can begin to examine beliefs or attitudes. or even temperament as an aspect of earth element. So it's interesting to work with that as a contemplation theme, is solidity. What seems so solid? I was at the sea lion caves yesterday, and they have a sea lion skeleton that was found in the embedded in the rock. I don't know, have you all seen anybody seen it? Mm-hmm. But those were bones, and now they're rock. Mm-hmm. And had they not been extracted, they would be probably just part of the seawater at this point. So everything is temporary. All matter, all form is temporary. So the second one is earth and then air. Air having to do with breath. So that's a primary practice that we use, the flow of breath, movement, motion. So you can use that throughout the day as a theme for returning. Any moment you take, if you do one breath zazen, which I highly recommend, you bring zazen into your daily round, you do one breath zazen. And so you can say, okay, and sometimes, of course, the breeze helps you become aware, oh yeah, motion, air, breath. And sometimes when you're in a particularly holding breath situation, you realize you're holding your breath. Sometimes I notice that because I have a certain state of mind that has taken over. And then I realize, oh, I'm holding my breath. And immediately there is the motion restored. So motion is elemental to our experience and to the way things are, motion. And we can also think of that as part of the teaching on impermanence. Everything is impermanent. Everything is in motion at all times. Everything is in motion all the time. Not just your mind, not just your thinking mind. And actually, because the nature of the mind is motion, it is particularly challenging to sit in zazen with no motion in the mind. No motion in the mind. Which is how we would describe samadhi. No separate motion in the mind. Mind and body doing the same thing as the environment. There's no separation. So motion and breath, air element. And then there's fire. Heat and cool, excitation, inspiration, anything that enlivens, that starts stuff up is fire element, or heat and coolness. So, you know, when you're at a demonstration and everybody's really fire element has really become dominant, or you're in an argument and you're really losing your temper, fire element is dominant. If things really heat up, gets hot. So thinking about how fire operates in every situation of life, of consciousness, is very, it's kind of infinitely, minutely interesting when you look into what is the fire element in this particular moment of experience. You could say interest, if when you're interested in something, that's fire element, because you're just stirred it up. And then there's water, which is not only fluidity and flow, but it's also cohesion and connection. So thinking about biscuits. So who here has ever made a biscuit? You know, you just put the flour in the bowl and maybe some butter, salt, but then you add the water. And then you get biscuit without
baking powder.
Oh, that's baking powder biscuits. Well, you can make buttermilk biscuits, but there's water in buttermilk.
Yeah.
Sounds really good right now.
Let's go make some.
But anyway, you get the biscuit when you add the water. Cohesion. So, you know, sometimes we say that old relationships get kind of dried out and you become weary when the water element has decreased too much. Or maybe even the fire element has decreased. But water and fluidity. You think of the fluids in the body. There are many, many fluids in the body, many forms of fluid. You know, when you're working on an idea, let's say you're writing a piece, and it's flowing along. Well, you have a beautiful combination of all the elements in that moment. But then you hit a dry spot, and the ideas have cooled. They've dried out. There's not enough water. There's not enough inspiration. Not enough breath of life. So this is just one way to, another tool, another approach to becoming minutely interested in what are the qualities of that fill awareness. So then the last element is space. And certainly awareness is space. And the most wonderful addition to our meditation is the meditation on space. Because sometimes that's all you can do is just open the mind up and begin to look at, I mean, the particular instruction is begin with the perimeter of the body and then extend it an inch out and then 6 inches out, and you just keep going and going and going. And then you look at, okay, how big is awareness? How far does it extend? Is there an edge to awareness? Is there a color to awareness? Those are all questions to be asked that further help us tune into what awareness means in our experience directly. Sometimes when you're in a meeting and you're talking about policy and you're really hung up in certain kind of fixed parameters for it, it's really helpful to think, wait a minute, let's just open this up a little bit. What else can be seen here that could be of use? Space is really an essential element to creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It's departing from the known. So that's also the practice of don't know mind. Don't know mind is aware of whatever the content is as it's set up, as it's offered. But don't know mind then comes and says, oh, wait a minute, what else? What am I not aware of? And what am I not aware of is a question really about what goes beyond my sense data. Sometimes there's sense data that we're just not focusing on, we're not noticing. But sometimes it's beyond that, and that's where intuition comes in. Or gut. You have to make a decision. You say, oh, I don't know, this looks good, and this looks good, what should I do? And then you say, oh, wait a minute, what is my gut telling me? And sometimes the gut just clarifies the whole thing, and sometimes it doesn't add anything at all. It's like the gut's confused too. In which case you open to broader than that, and to just sometimes decisions, it's not the time to make a decision. Sometimes it is just not the time to decide, but just to wait and let things unfold in their natural way a little bit more, where you see what actually the better course would be. So all of the, you know, earth, air, fire, and water sounds very like, but it isn't. It's these are qualities that we remember to tune into in our experience. How balanced are you? You know, like, so what's obsessing on something? What would be something you might obsess on? Just somebody call out an obsession.
Social media,
yes. So there, what is missing in that as far as the balance of earth, air, fire, water, and space goes?
Let's say like maybe the water connection.
Connection. Water, earth, there's nothing there. I mean, there's the device.
It's just space, something happening in space.
It's not in space.
Cyberspace, they call it, but what is that?
Yeah.
It's not the same kind of space.
And yet, there's a lot of angst, a lot of emotional stuff going on.
Fire.
In this non-earth-based medium, which is a really important thing to keep in mind when you think about what the world is like, because we're only getting most of our impressions of what's going on through a disembodied, non-earth-based source, which is completely manipulable. So the other part of this elements teaching that's really, I find, quite useful has to do with the two truths. The identity of relative and absolute, which is can be really puzzling. What is that about? The identity, the sameness of relative and essential. In what way? Which should I believe? Should I believe that I'm me as I've been experiencing myself my whole life, or should I believe that there is no self? And that's really what it comes down to. It's like, you know, you're like, what is that? What is the meaning of that? And really, one way to look at that is through the teaching of the elements. That in the one hand, yes, there is a subjectivity that we all experience as a self that has a biography and a large collection of material matter. The cloud of materials that surround this me and mine. That's true. It's real. But the essential nature of all of that is the essential nature of all of matter, which is it's impermanent, and it has been accumulated in certain ways with certain characteristics that are familiar, but they have no reality. Let me give you an example of that. All of us grew up in families that had certain relationship to money. We were taught certain things about money and our own wealth and our own abilities to get it and hold it and use it, and what it means about a person if they have more or they have less. I mean, there's a whole universe around money attitudes. But if we were each to describe our family's money culture, we would describe very different things. I'm sure. We all come from, I mean, it's the same as, it's even more intimately karmic than our relationship to sex. Money is even more not talked about than sex. And so we have our own very secret inner culture around money. And actually, money doesn't exist. It doesn't exist, but it does, obviously, right? So that's a great example of the identity of relative and absolute that can be, when we look into anything, we look into the self. The Buddha way is the way of transformation. Well, what does that mean? It doesn't mean you're not going to be your karmic self. You're not going to deal always with your body stuff and your emotional stuff. But the basic point of view of everything that happens really shifts over time. And the more thoroughly meditation is engaged, the more the inner layers are opened up, the more profound the shifts are over time. And that, what is shifting, is the point of view, which changes how it feels, how the world is, what you see, what you don't see, what you see about yourself. We add that to the natural, without practice, possibilities of aging. Because I think when you age, as you get older, you see more and more about that you never noticed before about the world and about yourself. But then with Dharma practice, it's even more profound than that. Because it brings in, if the mind is more open, the choices are more full, which is where the emphasis in the teaching comes to precepts. If we're not coming from habitual ways of behaving, ways that we inherited and that we see enacted in the world around us, where do we come from? How do we make decisions about our own actions? And so the precepts are the precepts for healthy, connected human life. How to nurture benevolent connection is really what precepts are about. Water element. So, those are the basics of what we were exploring this week in a lot more detail. If you've never been to a Grasses and Trees retreat, I really urge you to do it next year. It is mostly outside and in the woods, and you go out, you know, you sit in the zendo for a sit, and then you go outside and stretch out and watch the bamboo leaves flap in the breeze and listen to the water column in the big old trees. It's quite wonderful because you let go of all of the, it's not quite as personally self-involved because you're outside. It's like any time you spend a lot of time outside, you're kind of released from your little closed world that predominates most of the time, the mental world. So any brief comments or questions about this before we go on to our chanting service?
I'm curious about how your talk relates to the middle way. Is that enough of the question to spike an answer?
Yeah, let me ponder that for a moment. It's exactly on point, really, because the middle way has to do with not getting so swept up in the sense world, the material world, that we continue to have a very well integrated mind that includes what is relative and what is changeable, what is open, the openness of everything. And so this is the middle way that we're always looking for and living according to. Because on the one hand, a mistake can be made if we think we're doing spiritual practice, that we rise above all of this world of confusion and body. And that's not a balanced understanding, because we are embodied, and this world is precious and needs care, needs our care. Or you can get so wrapped up in samsara, the world of desire and clinging, that you lose track of the bigger picture, of the openness, the spaciousness, the fluidity of what is always unfolding. So it's exactly on point. Thank you.